Hey everyone, it's Alex Kessler, your host of the Masters of Modern podcast. I am talking to you today because we have a sponsor this week. It is WizardryFoundry.com. They are the makers of the Grimoire Deck Box, which is the cool leather-bound fancy book. Goes on your bookshelf, but also you can open it up and it holds 1,000 cards. That's 1,000 cards, the whole cube. That's our modern gauntlet. I've also held an entire EDH collection of EDH decks. Really cool. They also make a smaller one that's great. It's the Pro Tour Grimoire box. It's meant for like two decks instead of a giant cube. It's a little bit more manageable. And they're also keep an eye out because they're coming out with cool 3D printed deck boxes. Ben is getting a Batman one, or so he said during the podcast you're about to hear, and I got a cool one with an X-Wing on it because Star Wars is the sweetest, way cooler than Batman. Hashtag Star Wars over Batman. And yeah, so check them out. Go to WizardryFoundry.com. If you use the code FEB4, you can get 25% off for the next 7 days. Check them out, and thank you guys for listening, and check out our awesome guest. Big thank you to the professor. He was great, and you'll be able to hear all of his sweet professor stylings on the episode that's about to happen. Thanks, guys.
Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I'm your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Eldrazi Winter.
It's very cold. It's very cold here. I'm wearing a big parka.
We can't even make a Game of Thrones jokes because winter is here.
Winter has come.
Yeah.
And joining us with the winter, the wonderful professor from Tolarian Community College.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm well, except in terms of my enjoyment of Modern at the moment, in which case I am not well. I am feeling quite ill.
But I feel like you wear like a three-piece professor suit all the time. Aren't you like at least dressed correctly for the cold?
I don't think that there are enough layers in the world for Eldrazi winter.
Do you guys think that back on the Game of Thrones references again, and this is a spoiler alert, but, do you guys think that
wait for 10 seconds, next 20 seconds, skip ahead. If you haven't watched last season of Game of Thrones,
the
television show is now skipping ahead of the books. And therefore, if you're referring to anything from the television show, you need to warn book readers about spoilers, because they have now passed so far that watching the TV show puts you ahead of the book readers, and so if you're a book reader, talking about the television show is giving spoilers, not the other way around.
My joke is getting progressively worse.
Work here is done.
Is Splinter Twin Ned Stark? Is that what happened? Are we in winter
now? I think we can talk about that. Yes.
Wait. What's the spoiler? That was from 1989. Oh my god!
It's like some people are like, you're like.
I didn't know the joke. I didn't know what I was gonna say. I was expecting some Jon Snow based.
Right. This was
conversations.
We can probably just take all of this out of the podcast. Let's start talking about Eldrazi Winter.
I mean, we could. No. We're keeping it all in.
We go live now.
So today, I actually had this whole thing where I was gonna make you do like news tape sounds, like, and then I was gonna be like, a whole news intro thing, but that didn't happen. But we're talking about three things. We're pretty much talking about all the things that happened in the news recently. We have two supplemental sets announced for this summer. We have a Eldrazi Menace taking over the format.
It's taken over.
Taken over the format. Yeah. It's kind of like Silumgar,
right,
lounging on his lounge. Splinter Twin is the Tassigur necklace around his neck.
Mm.
Yep.
I'd say the modern format is the Tassigur necklace around his neck.
I can go with that. So before we get onto all those greatness, I want to let all of you guys know that you should follow us on Twitter. We have a Twitter account.
Yeah.
At the MMCast.
You guys have been finding us recently and tweeting at us. It's been very fun.
I think I tweeted our statistics for last month, and it was like blatantly larger by, I think, 700% than the previous month.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like with the banning and the Pro Tour, this is kind of our season, so it makes sense. But it's been really, really fun, and meeting you guys on Twitter and interacting, and I'm gonna go on a podcast soon. Kessler, did you know that?
You get to guest on a podcast?
Is this your
first time?
Yeah.
All right. Second, and more importantly, and this is more of a big thank you, because there's been a bunch of people that donated to our Patreon, and it's awesome, and you guys should check it out if you haven't. There's cool stuff you can get, like a swag box that guarantees a Masters of Modern playmat and then gets into cool things. I cannot promise this will happen, but it's possible that I might attempt to commission Spellskite plushes and send them in a future month. Just keep that. Keep your eyes on that.
I like that idea a lot. I was going to say on the subject of the Patreon, we're going to have the additional content that we've been talking about now coming very soon because the first month of donation is ending. And we started midway through the month. But So when March hits, like, we'll send stuff out and we'll do the first bit of extra content, which I think we'll do some video. I think we're pretty excited. But the point is, really to hit, like we didn't set like a stretch goal, like a true stretch goal based on the number of people that actually listen to the podcast. We pretty much just assumed that like a small number would donate.
Like seven.
Yeah. So the gist of this whole operation.
Way more than seven have donated. And by more than, I think it's around 20.
Well, the gist of it is like more. If like several hundred of the listeners of this podcast donated $5 a month each, which is like kind of the gravy. That's like the gravy donation level because you get like the deck text, the additional episodes.
You get pretty much everything without getting the extra stuff.
Yeah, you don't get products. You don't get to read a message on the podcast. But I mean, as far as like what really we're going to be doing, you get most of it for $5. If several hundred of the people on the podcast did that, it would mean Kessler and I would attend every modern Grand Prix. We would do like meet and greets. We would do live streaming video podcasts. Like you can go look at the Patreon and see we don't really have a crazy stretch goal. It's like pretty localized. So you guys should do that because then it's just going to mean you'll get like 3 and 4 times as much content and it wouldn't be that big of a tax. So thank you for the ones that have thus far and
woo!
Go find it. I think it's patreon.com/themmcast, right?
Yeah, that'd be my guess. And last but not least, make sure to check out the Command Zone. They do awesome stuff. They do sweet videos with actually the professor who is on the podcast right now. Why don't you talk about your sweet videos, the kitchen table fables?
Yeah, well, that's largely the brainchild of Josh Lee Kwai, which is the kitchen table fables that we did one episode on my channel at Tularean Community College and then 2 more episodes on the Command Zone YouTube channel, and they were well received. I would definitely recommend checking them out. If you haven't checked them out, you can literally just type into YouTube kitchen table fables and you'll see all 3 of them pop out. If you have not seen all 3, if you have missed one of them, then there is one more for you to watch because we did piggyback it between our 2 channels to spread it out. And new episodes of that are coming up because Josh and Jimmy are going to be traveling up in my direction and a few additional secret guest stars will be joining us. Bum, and we're going to try and produce not just 3, but more than 3 episodes on this. It's tough because we all live far apart. For the last set, I flew down to LA to film with them. And because our special guest stars live up near me, this time it's their turn to have to put everything in a suitcase for the weekend and come up here. And we're going to see maybe we can actually get more than 3 episodes done. They take a lot of time because we got some high quality effects work being done, color matching and other things that I have no idea about, which again, Josh handles. But they're a lot of fun, well received. Check them out. If you haven't seen all 3, make sure you catch the missing one because I think people have seen 2 of 3.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm in one of them. Just FYI, I show up as a handsome.
You are,
and
do you remember?
Sword.
Do you remember your character's name?
Yeah, it was the knight. Of course, knight. I remember. I would never forget.
You had the real sword. Yeah. Everything else was fake, and we were just every 5 seconds. It was just like, and be careful with the sword.
Yeah, I think I made it a more
sword.
A more difficult production because the entire time we were afraid I was just going to stab someone. Though there's a scene where I like throw it like angrily at the ground like a spear and it just like stabs into the ground and looks great.
Yeah,
it's got a flag on the end.
Quick aside thought, Kessler, where can folks find you personally aside from our podcast?
Oh, at Kess Wiley
and
on Twitter.
I am at Ben Bateman Media. And Professor, where can the folks find you personally?
Well, personally, they could find me at my home, but I don't feel comfortable giving that address out. So I'm going to say that the best place to find me is actually at Tularean Community College on YouTube. But if you want a more personal interaction, then I am on Twitter, at Tularean College. And so you can go there. I also have a MySpace page and a Friendster page, but let's just focus on the Twitter.
Okay.
On the Twitter, yeah.
Professor, I don't have any money, but what I do have is a set of skills, and I will find you and have you sign this deck box so that I have a signed deck box from you.
It depends. What kind of deck box is it?
You're not even doing the Liam Neeson voice. This is
such a
waste.
I can't do a Liam Neeson voice.
I can do the Liam Neeson voice.
Do it.
No, I'll save it for later.
See, yeah.
You're dodging the question. I want to know what kind of deck box this is here. What's the deck box that you use, sir?
Oh, right now I've been using Fat Packs. pretty exclusively fat packs. Oh no, I use the Ultra Pro, the Ultra Pro hard case ones that have like the bottom tray with dice and then the top.
Those are sweet.
All right, fat packs get a no pass grade. The Ultra Pro Satin Tower A grade. I mean, the fat packs aren't even a deck box.
True.
You put your decks. How much does a modern deck cost? And you put that in a fat pack box. Spend $10, get an Ultra Pro Satin Tower.
No. Those are my commander decks because there's so many of them.
Oh well, everybody knows commander decks are dirt cheap. So yeah, absolutely.
I got one of those. What are those? What's that company they make the cool like flap over with like the red felt on the inside?
Ultimate Guard or Dex Protection. Dex Protection uses a velvet interior.
Dex Protection. That's what I got.
Yeah,
those things are sweet.
Oh, those are very sweet.
I guess I will plug. Technically, we have a sponsor, and he is giving me on Thursday a 3D printed. They're doing new 3D printed deck boxes. Their new thing they're trying to accomplish doing for people. So you have custom ones. Wizardry Foundry's 3D printed deck box. I will have it. It'll have an X-Wing on the front.
So as well as the other things we've already mentioned, check out those because I think it's like a product that's like coming pretty soon. I maybe have one also coming. Did I negotiate that? Like a Batman one, maybe?
I think you got a Batman one.
Oh, sweet.
This will be awesome.
Yeah.
Super excited. All right. Now let's talk about what we're supposed to talk about today. First off, easiest one, two supplemental sets this summer. The first one we kind of missed because we recorded last week's episode early, so we'll talk about it. Eternal Masters was announced. What do you guys feel about that? How do you guys feel about Eternal Masters?
Go ahead, Professor. You jump in first.
I have many opinions on this, all of them strong. I feel as though I am pessimistic because we have had not one but two Modern Masters, and we all know the routine at this point. The cards that you want will not all be included, and those that are will be shifted in rarity to Mythic. So all your dream reprints that are not on the reserve list, expect there to be at best one per box at the Mythic rarity, which is what I find very depressing because it defeats the purpose of providing adequate reprints. I also feel that we've learned from Modern Masters that this will be designed with draft in mind, meaning get ready for a lot of commons and uncommons that see no Legacy or Modern play. And so I hate to be a sourpuss, and that's me being a real sourpuss, and everyone right now is booing me and saying I'm a total
boo.
I'm a wet blanket, but someone has to do it because everybody's like hype. You need one voice of dissent. That'll be me. I feel pessimistic about this. I hope that this helps not just Legacy but Modern, because there has been the door left open that there could be some needed Modern reprints in Eternal Masters as well, and I am primarily a Modern player. I do play Legacy, but I am primarily a Modern player, so I mean, I really hope to get that, but I was sorely disappointed with the effect that both Modern Masters had on providing us with reprints, and so I'm looking forward to it, but cautiously.
See, my response to that is this, like, looking at the Twitter reaction after the announcement and the way that people, there was a lot of pessimism regarding the fact that, like, this is going to encourage interest to some degree in Legacy, but because of the lack of dual lands, it's not going to do anything but drive up the price of the non-included cards for new players that do want to get in, and especially drive up the price of dual lands, which is not advantageous to any new player wanting to get into Legacy. My response to that is, their hands are tied in that regard. There's nothing they can do. It's not, Wizards doesn't have in mind that it is better for them to necessarily kill Legacy. It's like, when they say they're not trying to kill Legacy, I believe them. The thing is, their alternative to not trying to provide another format, which is why they've pushed Modern so hard, is because they want that eternal format.
That's why they created it.
They want that eternal format that people like. The thing is, there's nothing they can do. The best thing they can do is take Wasteland and take Force of Will and put them into a reprint set so that the people that don't have them will get them. But ultimately, this is not about making Legacy approachable to the layman. This is about just providing... I think this is most valuable, honestly, to a Commander audience than anyone else. Mm.
So I guess here's the real question. This is the first one. Who is this set really for? Because I personally believe that this isn't for Vintage and Legacy players. I think they're calling it Eternal because they get to give that blanket statement, and they are including Force of Will and Wasteland, and it'll probably include some draft archetypes that are kind of centered around Vintage
Stoneforge
and
Mystical probably
and other sets. But I think this is much more for Cube and Commander.
Yeah, that's what I'm with. That's totally where I'm at. And so,
and specifically Cube, which when you mentioned the different draft archetypes and how it's going to be built for draft, and that might not be as much of a net positive similar to Modern Masters, I think it'll be better here because they're going to be building this set more with Cube in mind than anything else.
I also just like the way that they've thus far, like, I think that the Modern Master sets, the way they've handled those reprints has been pretty beautiful, because I like the fact that it hasn't tanked the economy. In some cases, it's driven the price up on certain cards. It has, for a time, during certain seasons, driven the price down on cards we wanted to see the price driven down on. So the people that want those cards, that need to buy those cards, if they do it correctly, do get a deal. I mean, they can get a deal. You could get Goyf for cheaper at a time. There were certainly cards like...
Goyf is harder to say that too, but you definitely can look at stuff like Aether Vial.
Or Cryptic
and
Command.
Cryptic Command and Ravager.
And cards like Daybreak Coronet, where like the demand was not so high that you were able to tank the price on it. And I didn't think that it mattered so much that it tanked the price on cards like Daybreak Coronet, so that's okay with me. But I'm excited for Eternal Masters. I mean, it'll be nice to, as long as there are foil versions. Have they confirmed there are foil versions of cards in the set?
Yeah. But your reasoning for that is different.
There's one foil per pack, they've also said. Similar to Masters of Modern. Just like with Modern Masters.
Got it.
So just to, again, as I seem to always love to do, play devil's advocate
right.
in terms of Legacy. I've had this conversation with some, and I do play a little bit of Legacy, but I've had this conversation with some Legacy fanatics, the legends of Legacy, you might call them, and they did bring up the point that even though dual lands are not being reprinted, there are a lot of Legacy decks that do not need or even run, as in optimal builds, dual lands. Like, not just a few outliers, but there's quite a few Legacy decks that can function without dual lands, and that if you are looking to get into Legacy and you are using Eternal Masters, now we don't know what's going to be in the set, but if you are using Eternal Masters as that jumping in point where prices are going to have that, as you describe, momentary blip where they go down and availability goes up and this and that, that there's more than several Legacy deck options that do not require those dual land cards. And so when I do understand the argument of this is going to drive up prices of the reserved list cards, which it already has, and I do understand and sympathize with the call for there to be a Legacy with the entire reserved list just banned already, but I see entry points into Legacy that don't require those cards. I think, you know, I mean, how many Legacy decks can you name that don't require dual lands? There's actually a significant number of them.
Dredge, Fish, Burn, Elves.
Right? Wow, that's five Pox. Without even having, six without even Belcher? Having to think about it.
Belcher has one Taiga. But that's fine. Like, one Taiga is not exactly breaking the bank.
And it's Taiga.
Right.
I mean, Elves has Gaia's Cradle, which is a different high-profile expensive card.
That's another issue, I suppose. Death and Taxes has a port, right? Port's on the reserve list, isn't it?
No, port's not on the reserve list.
Well, Krakus isn't on the reserve list. So Death and Taxes has Cavern, Wasteland, Risht, and Port. So that's an... And Death and Taxes in Legacy
Mud
is
another one. No, there are definitely...
So look at all these decks.
Yeah. So I can easily describe a metagame without the dual lands. You can even... I think I was on the Legacy Weapon podcast, and we talked about how Storm could probably get away with... the blue-black Mirrodin, Scars of Mirrodin Fastland instead of a dual land if it needed to.
Yeah.
I mean, look, you realistically, when you talk to some people, there are some Legacy decks, people like, for instance, Candelabra of Tanos is an expensive card that prevents people from playing it to some point where they will choose other decks because of that. And
yeah,
that's it. You'll sometimes see people play High Tide and they'll, are you playing it with Candelabra or not? And look, you could imagine that in a few years, Legacy still exists, and you just see less people playing with dual lands, and those decks that don't require them just become
harder. Less of the metagame.
You just when somebody shows up with a Rug Delver list, it's like, well, they can play it, and
right?
That's what's happening.
Yeah.
And
when I've talked to people, and when I got into Legacy, the path to Legacy is getting Wasteland first, because by getting Wasteland, you can play almost any of the decks that aren't using dual lands to some degree, and then you get Force of Will, because then you open up an entire other level, and then you slowly pick up one or two dual lands, and you could also supplement your mana bases in Legacy with fetch lands.
I mean, when I was playing, I got three Wastelands, I got four Force of Wills, and I had like all the fetches I needed and two Underground Seas, and that was pretty much the gist of it. And I kind of knew from that point, like, okay, I'll borrow the Wasteland that I need, and I can pretty much build what I want now. Like, give or take, I should be able to be just fine, and I didn't really need to go much beyond that. So, I mean, the barrier to entry is high, but it's not.
I definitely think this set can supplement, and it's one of the reasons I actually think Merfolk was saved from Modern Masters 2
Merfolk.
Obligatory. No, yeah, no, you have to. You have to support the Merfolk tribe. I think that's it. Obligatory in your contract.
Eight. Go on.
Yeah, no, they did. Yeah. I do think they were saved for Eternal Masters from Masters of Modern, knowing that they were going to be, or Modern Masters, that they were going to be using it for the set, because classically, Merfolk has been more of a legacy deck, and only recently, in the last year and a half or so, has become a modern staple.
Oh, you think we're going to see a Merfolk a tribal theme in there, because that works for draft and also is a viable non-dual land deck, eh?
Correct.
I would love to see that. I could use some spiffy new Mara Regeries. Mine has a little ding on it.
It would be a nice place for them to give us Silvergill Adepts for $1 and then cards
Curse
like
Curse Catcher, Silvergill Adept. I also could see elves being, because like classically they do
elves, yeah.
They do like one to three or like three tribal decks, and I could see Eternal Masters being like, this is Magic's history, having both goblins, elves, and merfolk. Hit the three out there.
You throw Mutavald in there, it drops it back down into like the $12-$13 range from 25. Completely. I get it. And it's fine, and I'll play the crap out of it. I can't wait.
What I want to say is that if anybody has a local game store where they are able to regularly and reliably fire off legacy events, that they should not feel that dual lands is keeping them from joining those events. I'm not talking about GPs. I'm not talking about, oh, wait, there aren't legacy GPs. Well, you know what
it's
I
like
mean.
Like one, right?
There's two.
One.
Two a year.
But you know what I mean. Like, I'm talking about if you've got any location where Legacy is played regularly that you are eyeballing, and you say to yourself, "Wow, the reserve list is what's keeping me." That's not true. There are, without even thinking about it, we've named over half a dozen Legacy decks that don't even need those dual lands, and any reserve list cards on them are minor and doable, and you can build towards and trade towards, and that should not prevent you from looking at those lists and being able to sit down and play some Magic, which is what I'm all about and what I'm always advocating.
Let's continue this into the other additional reprint set that's been announced, and that's Conspiracy 2, the official name, The Return of Brago or something?
The Rise of Brago?
I believe the official name is Conspiracy 2 Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah. Well, I think it's Electric Brogaloo. Yes, gotta laugh. All right.
So we have
What is the actual official name? I don't think any of us actually said it.
It might be I don't know. It's Brago, and it's a conspiracy set.
Brago's Revenge.
Yeah.
That seems like a Donkey
Kong
2
Feel level. The Brago. Feel the Brago.
Clapper's Cavern. Brago's Revenge.
So tweet at us what the name is.
Yeah. So the point here is like we've seen Eternal Masters is its own animal. I mean, the closest thing to Eternal Masters that we've seen, I guess you could say it's Modern Masters, but really it's Vintage Masters online is like...
No, it's Modern Masters, because Vintage Masters, the purpose of that is like, hey, look, we can reprint anything we want. Look at how awesome these Black Lotuses are.
Let's say it's somewhere between the two. But the point is, it's... So that we kind of don't really know what we're going to get. We'd like to think we know, but we've never had an Eternal Masters in paper before.
I do know that Tom Lapeel was the head developer and designer for both Masters of Modern 2. Modern Masters 2. Yeah. And
Eternal Masters 2. So maybe we'll see some similarities. What we have seen is a conspiracy set. We had Conspiracy 1 2 years ago?
2 years ago.
And it was fine. I think I played it once, but more than that, there was an interesting effect that some of the reprints from the original Conspiracy actually had. Stifle being a card that was dropped down in price based on that. Exploration was another card that was dropped down in price considerably.
Interesting about Conspiracy, and this is partly, and I do want to get into this a little bit more fully later after we talk about it, but Conspiracy, was built 4 years before it came out.
Right.
It like they built it and then they didn't know when to release it for years, and eventually they found a window. But also, and more importantly, there was zero high profile modern reprints in that set. Everything was a legacy one. Brainstorm, Exploration, for whatever reason, and I think partly because it was designed before the price problem of modern kind of came into being.
Right.
There are no reprints for modern in that set. I don't think that's going to continue.
No.
But I do want to point out that the first set was a almost purely legacy-oriented reprint set.
Now, from the point of view, jumping outside of Modern for a second with Conspiracy, one of the coolest things about Conspiracy was that the way one of the mechanics, specifically Will of the Council, was designed, Will of the Council became these cards where you, for those that don't know, the ability Will of the Council stated, when you play this card, you can vote for X or you can vote for Y. If X gets the most votes or is tied for the most votes, it happens. So in a two-player game, if you're playing one-on-one with someone and you cast a Will of the Council spell, you'll always get the version if it is tied for the most votes. So there ended up being some legacy implications because you had sort of like a kind of a white Vindicate to some degree. You had like Coercive Portal, which is like sort of a draw an extra card per turn artifact for four. There was a bunch of weird cards, generally. I mean, there was just a bunch of odd cards. And so that does add the fact that you got an odd mechanic that created powerful cards that were playable in Legacy. And I'm wondering if Conspiracy 2, they're going to go less in that direction and more in the traditional direction of things that would be good in Modern.
No, the one thing you have to keep in mind is that nothing in Conspiracy that is new will be legal in Modern. Only cards that have been printed in Modern or legal in Modern already will be legal that are printed in Conspiracy.
Agreed. Not like they're introducing new cards to Modern, but like, do you think that rather than seeing a focus on weird cards that became Legacy legal, you'll see more of a focus on Modern reprints? That's, I guess,
the yes. Case. Yeah. Sorry, Professor.
No. I would say that what I see when I was expecting Conspiracy 2 to be the summer set. I was talking to a lot of viewers who were like, do you think we're going to see Modern Masters 3 this year or this? And I'm like, no. It's going to be Conspiracy 2 and then next year Modern Masters. And I see this pattern. And then when Eternal Masters got announced, I was like, oh no, Conspiracy was too much oriented towards the casual player, towards the fun player, that sort of thing. And they've given it the axe. And when I heard them announce it, I really was a big fan of Conspiracy. And I think when now I see this, looking for patterns and things, I see Eternal Masters as the, you can't get it, it's for collectors, it's going to be hard to wrangle a box, no kid is going to be able to get a hold of it, packs are going to be twice MSRP in the shop, and it's going to satiate that segment of the Magic playing population. And then Conspiracy 2 is going to get the full print run. It's going to be widely available at MSRP. The boxes will still be $89 online a year after it's been printed. And so I think that then they're going to dive right into this idea of multiplayer, of politics, of all the voting. The voting was the thing that made Conspiracy distinct. That's what they're trying to take, the sort of gameplay that naturally happens politically at a commander table and institutionalize it in almost, I like to say it's mandatory fun. You're going to have to play this like a funny commander game sort of thing where everyone's voting and politicking. And I think you're absolutely going to see that return. People loved things like cards that would have an effect while you were drafting, all that sort of stuff.
Draft matter cards are really cool.
Yeah, everybody, that was like the one thing, like I heard, and again, everybody's impressions are different. My impression was that at least a lot of the spiky pro players, at least in my circle, at my game shop, in my, you know, community, they weren't a big fan of Conspiracy, but they had to acknowledge Draft Matters. Cards like that were freaking awesome.
Right.
Everybody loved that. I don't think they're going to shy away from it, because otherwise, why call it Conspiracy at all? Why have it? And isn't this odd, them doing the second summer set, and for a minute, everybody thought they were going to cancel From the Vault or the Commander series for the year, and they just said, nope, those are both coming too. So why do both? And I say, it's yin and yang. The yin is Eternal Masters, and the yang is Conspiracy 2 for the masses. That's my take on it.
I also do think with the new
having
schedule,
seen no deck lists at all and knowing nothing and just right. Completely talking out of one of the holes in my body.
I do think some of this is based off of the new release schedule. There are two blocks a year, and they have figured out that they have the ability to release more content. As a shot call that all people can tweet at me next year when I'm right and or tweet at me when I'm wrong, I'm going to guess that, as you said, they're going to now use this August release schedule for a more overprinted or heavily printed or printed for everyone set block area. I'm predicting Unglued 3 for 2017 in August.
Oh, God. Please,
I don't necessarily want it, because that's the reason I left Magic the first time, but I'm predicting it right now.
Well, the only good thing about Unglued
is the lands.
Yeah. Literally.
We'll see what happens. But I do think they'll use that for a limited release, but like unlimited printing of that release until it's no longer popular set for the August thing, meant for more casual players. We're giving Eternal Masters and Modern Masters repeat sets during the June months. Or July? June? June?
Yeah. I mean, they're being careful to not tank the economy, which is like, I don't really... I guess I understand where players come from when they talk about price gouging and how frustrating it is to try to get into a format that is so expensive. I also understand that when prices are so high, it makes bannings particularly upsetting. But I'm also just like, when you're going to play a format like Modern, a format like Modern is a heavily competitive format. Like, you're supposed to... It's supposed to be a little bit of a barrier for entry. It should not be easy to get into Modern the way that it's easy to get into Standard. That's kind of just by nature the way it works. So if you want to get into it, you will find a way to get into it. Like, I don't think that tanking the price on the economy by just aggressive reprints, which is what some people call for, makes any sense. You don't want it
but
to
But why
just...
shouldn't there be an easy point of access? Can't that coincide without tanking the entire economy? Well, I'll give you an example. Up until this recent Standard season, what was the... I don't know how much you guys play Standard, being the masters of Modern, but typically, if somebody up until recently would say, well, what's the easy entry point into Standard? 9 times out of 10, someone's going to say, hey, just throw a Red Deck Winds-style deck together or a Burn deck together, and that's dirt cheap. And yet we still had super expensive Standard decks. We had a very vibrant Standard economy, but there was that entry point where someone can play. I mean, describe the process that someone has to go through from scratch to get into Modern. Does it take a 5-year commitment into Magic where first they have to start drafting, then they have to get into Standard, then they're going to trade up? I mean, what do we need to do? Can't we have a certain baseline of entry? Do we really want the format to be, well, listen, this isn't for everyone? That doesn't seem like I just feel like, well, shouldn't there be an entry point?
I mean,
I'm not saying all decks everywhere, but what's the entry point? Should be a doorway.
We do often talk about many types of decks. Like, you have the mono green stompy lists that are available that can win your FNMs pretty consistently. You have the blue white reflector decks that just kind of play bounce spells that I've tweeted lists of multiple times. And I mean, some of the problem is one of these decks is available and is tier one just under the radar, but as soon as it wins one of these GPs or Pro Tours, it loses that under the radarness and some cards will spike. Examples being Merfolk or Elves or Lantern Control. These are all decks that you could have bought into forever knowing they existed and placed decently before that, but didn't know they were going to be top tier until they won a GP. And then you see some commons or uncommons rise to a price level that you might not be willing to buy into.
Yeah, I mean, fully. It happens every time. I mean, I had this conversation at the local shop the other day. A kid walked in. He was talking to the shop owner about, okay, what are the budget decks in Modern to buy? And he was like, well, this is convenient. We have one of the guys from the podcast here. What do you think? And I was like, well, you could try Merfolk. And I was like, no, you can't do that because the other vials are expensive. And you get, it's kind of cheap, but it's not that cheap. And then I was like, well, you could try Elves. And I was like, no, you can't really get into Elves for that cheap.
There's only two cards in Elves that are above $10.
I know, but just the Heritage Druids alone, that's almost $100.
Right, but look at Standard. Even if Burn...
$100 is fair.
Yeah, I think diving into a deck and spending under $300 for Modern is allowable to ask. I don't think that's a ridiculous ask of someone trying to get into the format. Standard right now, and Standard generally, yes, there are the mono burn decks, or there are tier two decks that aren't just completely viable that you can play in Standard, and those exist in Modern. I mean, you can play blue-white control decks that don't play fetch lands, or they play the Standard legal fetch lands. I do think right now, because Standard legal fetch lands are cheaper than they normally would be, and shock lands are cheap forever, apparently, you can buy into some of these decks pretty inexpensively.
Well, I also think that, and we should move on from this, but
I do have one more point here. One other thing to pay attention to is right now we're in this Eldrazi winter, and Modern's about to become one of the least popular formats out there. People are resisting to play it, and we'll talk about Eldrazi winter in a second.
Yeah.
Now is a great time to buy into these decks, that are generally good but aren't seeing play right now.
Well, and the thing is, this is what I was going to say, is from the point of view of approachability to a new player, the Magic economy just on the whole is a cyclical economy. I mean, that's based on the format that is popular in the given month. And Modern, by nature, because of the fact that there are so many viable decks, and so whatever the deck that is sort of en vogue will be the one people focus on, and popular decks fall out of favor, you'll notice... You know, Grixis Control for right now is not as good of a deck as it otherwise was. So some of the cards that are just good in a lot of decks will continue to be expensive. Some of the cards that might have been a big pain to get before, you can probably get for pretty cheap right now. If you're patient, you care about getting into the format, and you wait for the trends, you can get into Modern for a reasonable price. You just can't be hair trigger and say, I want to get in right now. This is the deck I want to play right now, and I'm going to buy all the cards for that deck and expect to get a deal. It doesn't work like that.
There's also one other point that I remember when you mentioned that Modern is a cyclical format on this. everyone's freaking out right now about Modern being expensive to get into because of these price gouging and these giant spikes because the Pro Tour happened and we're now walking into Modern season and the Modern pre-TQ season is about to start. But in December, November, October, for months, a lot of these decks that are now very expensive and a lot of these cards, we were screaming, buy. This is the time. No one's playing it. But because no one was thinking about it, they didn't think about buying it then. And then the moment that they can't anymore is the moment they want to play.
Yeah, that's pretty much what happens. I mean, it's like instant gratification.
Sure, and there's also, I mean, it depends on what your expectations are. I'm always advocating that, you know, are you looking to win a GP or are you looking to go down to your local game store and play? I mean, there are budget options in Modern. It depends on your expectations.
Right.
I still will go down to both my local game store and log on to Magic Online and jam it out with my mono red Just Mountains deck for Modern, and I win. Is it consistently every time first place? No, although every now and then it is. And that's an incredibly affordable deck. The most expensive piece being Goblin Guides, which can be replaced with Monastery Swift Spears. It's about expectations. And so a lot of people look at that list and say, well, that's ridiculous. You need to be playing Naya Blitz if you're going to have any chance with that. So it's like, no. I just want to sit down and play. And I
Mono
can still
Red
win.
Burn was playable forever. Just because Naya Blitz has the extra 5 percentage points over it doesn't mean that Mono Red Burn
exactly.
is still viable.
And that brings me to why I actually think it is in everyone's best interest for there to be a emphasis on what I guess I would call the casual Modern player, because what we need in Modern is a little bit more to the mixture than just the spiky GP pro mentality. We need people coming into the stores, playing at the PTQs or whatever just for fun, bringing in their homebrews, looking around. Modern has so much potential for homebrew. Modern has so much potential for people thinking outside the box. And actually where that comes from is when you get a larger percentage of people making homebrew decks, Johnny style decks, joke oriented decks, things like that. And every now and then something goofy happens and you get a new deck list. There've been a lot of comments that many Modern decks that came onto the scene, all the pieces that were needed for them were available and just never tapped into for a long period. And then suddenly it was discovered. More people playing means more experimenting. Modern just really could benefit from that. And so when we do have an encouragement for average players to come on down and sit at the table with us and join us, we start to see new things and new possibilities. It's good for the whole format. I think it benefits everyone, which is why, you know, tanking the economy is not something I'm advocating, but having more people at the table, people who aren't necessarily competitive minded at the table for Modern, it just is win-win.
I mean, to speak to your point there, the classic example of what you're talking about was Amulet Bloom. I mean, Amulet Bloom, Goryeo's Vengeance, these are decks that did completely exist. I mean, the same with the prison deck, the
Lantern Control.
Right.
They come out of the woodwork with pieces that had been around for forever, and people act surprised. I mean, the most fun I've had in Modern period is the Superior Burning Cocoa deck that we've talked about on this podcast a million times, and I've played a lot of that deck, and it is borderline competitive. Now, granted, it plays a lot of good cards, but it's also trying to do some pretty wonky things, and I got to play a lot of the cards that I love to build that deck, like cards that I always wanted to build a deck with Mirror Superior in Modern, and it's
right.
borderline competitive. Like it's
every week when I go down to Friday Night Magic for Standard, there's always a group of players who are saying they're bringing in a silly deck, they're bringing in something that they just threw together, and you never ever hear that in Modern, or you seldom hear that in Modern at the events, because it's so much more competitive minded, spike minded, pro player minded, and I feel that actually hurts us in terms of making those discoveries. And making those discoveries means a diverse format. What if there's an answer to the Eldrazi out there that we need some goofy Johnny style player to discover? We gotta get more people at the table, man.
Well, and I do think the idea that people need to look at what is out there and be creative with what they're trying to play is something that needs to be encouraged more often. I think that part of this is just I do think Modern is still in its teenager status of a format. It is only, you know, 4 or 5 years old. And at this
sure.
point, you know, the main onus on playing it has been previous to this, pre-TQ, you know, PPTQ events and GPs. And just in the last year have F&M started, like, only last year have stores been able to hold a modern F&M, a standard F&M, and a draft F&M all at the same time. Up until last year, you could only hold two, and most stores were afraid of doing anything other than standard or draft. Now they have the option to do more than those events and to see what is possible, and this is allowing some more of these homebrew, home-style decks to be allowed to be played. I mean, like, we do nothing but encourage this type of gameplay on this podcast because we do think, you know, there are decks out there that people haven't discovered or haven't placed with that are good. Look at the Mono Blue Turns deck.
Yeah.
That, like, that is a deck
that's a great deck.
Like, not expensive to pick up right now, has placed pretty decently, and I guarantee if you have someone like a Sam Black or even a Zach Elsack, someone that, like, is really good at that type of gameplay, take it to a tournament and spike a GP. Tomorrow, those cards will be way more expensive, but right now is the time to possibly be able to buy into it.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of reprinting, because we're on this subject, and this is the next thing on the outline. Wizards reprint policy. So Sam Stoddard recently wrote an article on Wizard Daily MTG talking about how most likely they're now unwilling to reprint any of these powerful cards you might be interested in standard. They tried it with Thoughtseize and Mutavault, and it was a disaster from their perspective. Even the fetch lands right now have been running into problems, and the last couple times they've tried, being with Liliana the Veil during M15, with Inquisition of Kozilek during Oath of the Gatewatch, and even with Goblin Guide during the standard set, they've basically tried it. It was in the design files, and they took them out because standard can't handle these modern cards. And if they do force it into it, and it's a problem, then it makes standard it doesn't make standard the very new format they're looking to do. I think that the reason we're getting both Eternal Masters and Conspiracy 2 is these are 2 years after they realized that modern is going to be a problem in this area. Modern, this is when, like, the Fetchlands first spiked, was about 2 years ago. And they're now being, this is their, the fruits of those efforts of being like, okay, we need to come up with a real plan to have multiple reprint sets a year for modern to get some of these staples out there in a way that's actually attainable.
Because the Modern Masters, as we've all seen, is a very, very, very temporary reprieve. And then basically everything just goes back to normal, give or take a couple cards.
Which is why I do think Conspiracy is going to have just a ton more reprints.
But probably not at the Mythic level.
Professor?
Well, yeah, I what you just described sounds beautiful. You paint this picture of this utopia where we're... I would love that. I would not object to that. But again, as I mentioned at the beginning, I don't know that that's what we're going to see. I actually have this feeling that the opposite is true, that they have said that the allure of this game is in the frantic scuffle for product. Remember when we had the little, you know, to do with the Battle for Zendikar fat packs where everybody was sold out, nobody could get them, the stores were charging $80 for a fat pack and everything. There was a lot of people saying this is great for Wizards because it's creating a commotion about how badly everybody wants their product. And I feel that you're going to see, you know, Conspiracy 2, it's going to have a, you know, you want to show prove me wrong a year from now, go ahead. But I'm going to predict right now Conspiracy 2 has very few reprints. It's almost entirely going to be new cards. It's going to have a lot of new cards. And the cards that are reprinted are largely going to be for draft. And it's really just a selection. Like, ooh, we've got this one mythic here, this one rare here, this one uncommon here. And just this handful. Out of 256 cards, 16 that we need. That sort of
16,
ratio.
16 specific cards could be huge to the format. If you have Goblin Guide, Damnation, there are like very specific cards that are very expensive that if you included them in that set, and then on top of that you have the reprints from Eternal Masters, even if each of them only has 16 cards, that's 30 cards that are currently overpriced possibly being reprinted into the format.
It's not enough. It's not enough. We need reprints of too much, and we need it on a level. We do. I mean, we need it on a level where... even just mana bases alone is more than 30 cards to be able to reprint what people need for mana bases, excluding
that's not true.
What's
I mean,
on the all of the fetch lands, all of the shock lands, the filter lands are $30 each right now. Whether you need it or not, it's absurd.
But the actual to build a modern mana base correctly, the main cards you need are the Future Sight Dual Lands, which I would be very surprised actually if we don't see reprinted in one of these two sets. Mm-hmm. You need the fetch lands, but you could supplement your enemy colored fetch lands with the standard colored fetch lands, and you can pick deck that those standard fetch lands are available. If the question is, we want every deck that you could possibly want to play in Modern to be affordable for everyone, that seems unlikely and unfair, especially to people that invested. But saying that some of these decks will be available and easy to get your hands on or possible to get your hands on seems more likely. And with the Shocklands already being pretty cheap because they heavily overprinted them, with the standard fetches being available and the Future Sight, if they can reprint the Future Sight dual lands, those are really the main mana base pieces you need to play some of these decks in Modern.
Well, let's also talk about Eldrazi Winter.
The end has come. The tentacle horror has destroyed our lives. So, how many? It was 6 people in the SCG top 8?
4 of the top 8 were Eldrazi decks.
Okay.
Right? Because the other 4 were Affinity, Merfolk, Kiki Cord.
And regular Bant combo, Abzan combo? Coco combo? Coco.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Abzan Company?
Yeah, I think it was Abzan Company.
Those were the like day 2, it was like 50% plus of the day 2 field were Eldrazi decks.
Right. Well, I think if you take it up to the top 22, I want to say, is the number that I was told. What's 16 times 2? 32?
Yeah.
It was 75% of the top 32 was Eldrazi.
So here's my thought. This is, and we've talked quite a bit about the fact that playing 8 Sol Rings is too good. Like, if you have a deck that wants to... And the deck that actually can play those and run smoothly with those cards, it's not like you're having to do like really, really like broken backwards things, like discard a bunch of cards to get that effect. It's like those are just your lands and they just cast the cards in your deck and that's what happens. So that's really good. The issue with this and the reason that there has to be a banning and there will be a banning in April is because there has been a ton of theory crafting as far as what beats the Eldrazi decks. But we're in the situation now where if you don't draw your answers... If you don't come out correctly against them, or they're on the play and they just have a nut draw, it didn't matter what you came up with, because what they can inherently do is so powerful that other Magic cards just don't match up. Like, you really can't ignore what they're doing and try to go over the top, because you won't be as fast as them as much of the time. So your percentage will just be lower. So basically, you're having to jam your deck, main deck, full of a bunch of really, really narrow hate cards for a strategy that if you're on the draw might be too slow anyway, which is why there has to be a banning and the numbers are absurd. And that's what we're at. I mean,
Professor.
Yeah, I think obviously the smartest thing to do is to wait until the Battle for Zendikar is about to rotate out of production. And that's the optimum time to ban it. That way we can hopefully replace it with whatever is in the new set that's being released. And we can create a nice cycle going where whatever takes over Modern is in the current set. No, I'm just kidding. Being snarky.
Like, you're waiting for Battlefield. Okay.
Oh, but you know, I'll tell you the truth. Like, I was making a joke there, but I did hear people in all seriousness saying that they felt this is exactly what the company wants, is that the deck that's dominating is using all of these cards from the current set, and that they created a need for it through a strategic banning, and that if they play their cards right, no pun intended, they can do another banning that shifts it again towards an emphasis on something in the next current set and keep it going. And you know what? If the next banning update comes and they don't even ban this yet, I could almost not be surprised. I don't understand why there's so much of a message from people kind of defending this state in Modern, why there's so many people that are saying, well, you know, like, just give it some time, give it some time. Why? What is the point in giving this time? What are we gaining by it? Why is the message we shouldn't have an emergency ban? Why is that the message? I don't understand that. I genuinely don't. Everything about the Splinter Twin ban to me seems like it was a huge mistake, that it went against the Bible of Modern, that it did nothing but hurt players in the format. Everything about these Eldrazi decks, and yes, I know the two are not not as related as people make them out to be, that it was a bad coincidence of happening at the same time and people are associating them with one another, not necessarily true. But, you know, having this domination of the Eldrazi decks, this is not a good thing for Modern as well. You know what I'd say is I wish tomorrow morning I woke up to ban Eldrazi Temple, unban Splinter Twin, apologize, move on. I think that'd be the healthiest thing in the world.
Well, so first, with the Splinter Twin ban, I do want to say that it's unfair right now to judge what the format would look like without it based on the Eldrazi format. And you mentioned it yourself, they're not necessarily related, and I do think Eldrazi, because of Thoughtnot Seer, would have a pretty decent matchup against the Splinter Twin decks. It wouldn't have, 100% of the time I win, but I think it has some play there anyways. I do think that an emergency ban based off of Moto numbers and an SEG event is not fair. And I do want to wait till after the GPs. And by the time we wait for these GPs, we're going to be a month out from the ban restricted announcement anyways. And I think that is why Wizards is waiting.
Yeah, and
classically, SEG events aren't known for their creative oomph on how to fix a format. If you look at the standard SEG event before a Pro Tour, when a set rotates, and then the actual Pro Tour metagame, 99% of the time, they're drastically different. And the top eight doesn't even show up at that SCG event.
Yeah, completely.
Let me ask you a question. Is there any doubt in your mind, that at the next update to the ban list that Temple should be banned?
I'm not reasonable. Sold that it shouldn't be Ugin, but
I
okay, Temple or Ugin, but like do you feel that you talk about a jury and you talk about the concept of reasonable doubt. Is there any reasonable doubt that you possess? And I actually thought that when they banned Twin that there was so much noise about it, and I'm not just saying this, but out of all the noise that I heard, honestly, the podcast that you guys did talking about the Twin ban was just the one thing I would recommend for people to listen to.
Oh, thank you.
I thought you hit it out of the park. Thank you. There was so much noise, so much chatter, and I almost tuned it out. And I sat down and I put it on because I'd read so many articles, and you guys just really hit it out of the park with that. You said everything perfectly. You really had a grasp on it. So honestly, when we talk about the concept of reasonable doubt, the next ban update, when it takes place, either Temple or whatever, is there any reasonable doubt that we're going to hit that point? It's like, yeah, we don't need to ban either of these, or this needs to end. And if the answer is yes, this needs to end, what are we waiting for?
Well, because I think
Eternal Promise policy.
Yeah, and also people bought these cards after the result of the Pro Tour, thinking, okay, these are powerful, these are cool, this is exciting. There's Modern Grand Prix coming up. Like, I want to be playing for the next season because this is what's hot. If those people who bought those cards right after the Twin banning have the rug pulled directly out from under them, they have to give it at least now.
And from an emergency perspective, Wizards has a policy, an official policy in the books that legally or not legally, whatever you want to say, law, but they will ban cards in formats at these expressly stated times. So as a buyer of that product, I can assuredly know that I'm going to be able to have these cards unless this moment happens. And Aaron Forsyth has doubled down on Twitter saying, no, we will not be emergency banning, leaning on the side that saying like, oh, it's a policy they have to follow. Fine, they're following the policy. And as far as Modern goes, if this was in the middle of the PTQ season or the pre-TQ season and Modern pre-TQ season, I'd be much more worried. If the general format was being enforced and forced to be played by stores locally every week for the next month and a half, then there would be more of an argument to me of having to emergency ban, because that's a situation where you're falling into, like, I'm forcing my players to play a format that is bad. There is three GPs and a few SCG events before now in the ban thing. I think they're letting the format see if they can figure it out. I am 75% sure. So I would say there is a small reasonable doubt that it's possible it might go away. I think it's possible someone might be able to figure out a way to stop it, possibly.
No, what?
I don't think there is. I think it's going to be banned. I'm like very positive.
You can't argue against what I said.
Yeah, no, I agree.
That is the way that, like, just from the basic point of view, that like it's what they are able to do is faster than any hate you can come up with. The funny thing about this, though, is that really what it comes down to, the mana base is the problem, but the card that actually makes the deck a problem is Thoughtnot Seer. That's
the... both. Well, here's the deal. It's... If Wasteland existed in the format and they reprinted Wasteland in the modern, this deck wouldn't be as much of a problem.
Right.
But it doesn't exist. It doesn't. There's no reasonable main deckable card that most decks are playing that can hate it out. And the type of effect that would hate it out is frowned upon in modern Magic.
I mean, when I say Thought Knots here, like, Professor, do you understand where I'm coming from with that? Like, the issue is... It's the fact that you can play so quickly, but it's also like that deck would have no point of actual relevant interaction if it couldn't play a turn two, four Vendilion Click. Like,
sure.
And that's the real issue.
And it's blatantly better.
So what I want to touch on is this point that you're talking about. And this is the thing where I'm just, you know, in such a different position, because when you say, well, if we were at a different point in the season, then this would have a different implication. But that's exactly it. Okay. I go down to my local game store every Saturday and Thursday night, which is when modern tournaments were held. And for the last, you know, a huge amount of time, those have been packed events, 24 people and up, coming in, playing Modern, and they're not firing anymore. Why aren't they firing anymore? Well, 20% of
people don't want to play.
Right. And so when you say, well, we've just got this much time and this is going to happen, and then it's like it's a seasonal thing, and that's exactly the thing that takes this format, the format that your entire podcast is based around, I might add, and positions it as not a real format. This isn't a regular thing. This is a seasonal thing. This is not a thing that you can go down to and play at your local game store every week. It's only when it's in season. It's only if when it's in season it's going to have the right conditions. People aren't going to want to play it, and that's exactly the thing that I personally feel we should be fighting against. I feel that this is the sort of format that should be going on, not seasonally, the Pro Tour is seasonally, but every single week events should be going on at your local game store in this. We should be looking at this as a healthy, long-term part of Magic the Gathering.
But we did that. With the pre-TQ schedule, and the result was that stores would just not run modern pre-TQs. When they had, you can pick standard, modern, or sealed for any of your pre-TQ, it just ended up being standard or sealed, because even if you're, and you know, almost every community has that one legacy or modern store, and so they would do the modern one, but for the most part, stores would say, even if I have a decent modern group, by having standard, I'm going to get my store and all of the other stores' standard groups, and I'm going to be there's more of an incentive.
But you can never fight against that, because we're taking the rug out from underneath our own feet. Need to build.
You can't fight that specific word with the pre-TQ situation by enforcing a modern season, which has been successful in the past. What I do think, and I do agree with you on, is that Wizards needs to focus on not just the pre-TQ seasons as the most important thing moving forward. But in that regard, I do think that they have a policy that they established, and I can remember what was the last emergency ban in modern Magic?
There's never been one.
So like Wizards has basically just made a promise to the world, and like a promise that I would argue is probably very, very, very similar to the restricted list, that they ban cards on their announced ban and restricted list announcement days. That's how they follow the policy.
Yeah, but if you went by Wizards' promises, then Splinter Twin wouldn't have been banned. That's them breaking their promise anyway.
They promised three things with Splinter Twin. The three things they promised were with the ban list for Modern. One was diversity, one was speed, and one was an ethereal thing they decided on. But Splinter Twin falls under one of those things.
I mean, despite the fact, and you mentioned the podcast we did on that, we defended the decision at the time based on the idea that there are fun things that can happen that could have happened if Eldrazi hadn't come up. However, that being said, aside from those things, I still think that it was sacrilegious to ban Splinter Twin in Modern. Like, I don't like the fact that that was the decision and the way the decision was made. And we know from experience on the Tom Lapilli episode, the first one, talking about why Pro Tours and Modern are a problem, that the reason that that ban happened, we know exactly, precisely why it happened. He even shot called it a little bit way ahead of time. So,
yeah,
you know, like, it's, to me, the idea of an emergency banning in Modern, do you need it? I mean, look, if you were going to emergency ban these cards, then you would have just had to emergency ban Treasure Cruise, because, like, at the time that was happening, when Treasure Cruise and Blue-Red Delver decks and Ascendancy decks were just everywhere, I mean, it was the same level of unfair. It was like...
That's fair,
And the lesson they learned, and this is part of it, this is somewhat of a lesson they learned in the past. With the Treasure Cruise bans and the Delve bans, when they first came on the scene, everyone was like, oh my god, we need to ban Jeskai Ascendancy. That card is so broken, blah, blah, blah. And look at where we're all now. That's part fair. Of it, I think, what they're doing with the GPs is maybe seeing what should they ban. Should it be Temple? Should it be I? Should it be Thought Not Seer? It should be I or Temple.
It'll be one of the lands.
But okay. Like, I definitely think, you know, they're doing the best they can to gain data, and I don't think a single SCG event is enough data for them or me personally. And I do think they'll ban something. I am 100% positive that we are getting a ban during the Shadow of Innistrad ban and restricted announcement.
It will be I. And the reason it will be I is because if you don't ban I, you still have the I Urborg mana base, and you can still get the completely busted above 2 mana, extra mana on turn 1. Like, you can get Mimic and Endless One, or you can get, like, Mimic. Like, you can get, like, 3, like, 4, 6 mana on turn 1, which... Temple
with Vesuva makes it so you can play the deck pretty close. What it is, you don't get the crazy broken starts, but you get a pretty... That's the problem. I don't know which card they're going to have. They might ban both.
We had a conversation.
Walk into the day and they're like, Iavugan and Eldrazi Temple are both banned.
I had a conversation with Brown about the Vesuva plan, and he said they tested Vesuva heavily during testing for the Pro Tour just to see how it interacted with Temple, and that it makes the deck extremely average and like... powerful, but like not like aggressively powerful, not like broken. Like I have the
but
same
what happens
thought.
When you open an Iavugan Expedition and it's banned?
Right. I mean, that's really tough. I mean, that is super tough.
I would still rather open the Iavugan Expedition post ban than open one of the Landlands Expeditions, of which I've now opened two.
Well, here's a question.
Do you call them Landlands?
Yeah, I call them Landlands because they need lands when they come into play. Yeah. They're Landlands. They're Landlands.
What if team guys... Tangoland? Hashtag Tangoland.
Nah, my vote is Landlands is my number one choice. Number two is have lands. That's it.
What about?
I like land lands.
What's yours, Ben?
I just like calling them battle lands.
Okay, so tweet at us hashtag battle lands, hashtag land lands, and hashtag tango lands.
My question
Do
is
it.
This.
Land lands.
What if you were to ban? This is just a radical idea, and we should move on from this because I think we're harping on it. But my idea was like, what if you were to ban Thought Not Seer and Reality Smasher from Modern? Like
that seems the least likely because
agreed.
Those are their brand new cards that they want people to play with while. And I think if you ban Iavugan or Temple, both of those cards are still playable in the format and good, then they want that to happen. But I think what you kind of mentioned this before, that this is like Wizards almost tried to make this happen. Conspiracy, Brago's returning. In reality, I think they knew this was a possibility and then were excited that this would be probably good. And I don't think they realized to what extent this would happen. There's no way they did this on purpose to the extent where people would stop going to stores and tournaments. They don't want Cobblade 2, and that's literally what we're in. Worse than Cobblade.
This is what I don't understand. When they talk about not testing for Modern, it's like...
They don't test for Modern.
I know, but like...
Why
this
don't
is,
they?
This is what I don't get. It's like, okay, you think that reprinting Iavugan and Eldrazi Temple are good enough ideas that you want them in the Modern reprint set. So you know for a fact those cards are going to be in Modern. People are going to have copies of them from their experience last summer. Now you're printing cards that 100% by virtue of those cards you've promoted being in Modern will become inherently unfair. And it does not take much to figure out the two Eldrazi lands and the two cheap Eldrazi spells you're printing are going to pair together and be totally, totally busted.
Like, I mean, it took 6 months. It took 3 months from Battle for Zendikar coming out for people to start actually playing the black-white Eldrazi list with those lands legal. Second, it took Andrew Brown's team and Team Channel Fireball, the only really teams that took the actual serious Eldrazi deck seriously, weeks of the best players in the country only playing Modern for 6 hours a day. Wait, 6 hours a day to figure out that this is by far the best deck, period. And Wizards can't test the new cards against other players other than Wizards players. That's the problem. Wizards can't take a Modern deck playing their new sweet cards they're printing to the local FNM and play against other Modern decks. The only people they can play against these cards are other Wizards employees. They're the only people that can see these new cards.
Yes.
So every moment they spend on that is... it's not absurd. Like, they can't go to a local game store with a Modern deck with Thought Not Seer a year before Thought Not Seer comes out and be like, oh, this is new cards. You can't see these, but I'm going to play it against you.
Well, like, okay. No. Because
the fact that they don't test for Modern.
Sure. They just need to hire. They need to hire 4 people or 2 to 4 people. Maybe the 3 of us.
Yeah. Or six.
Or six. Maybe 8. whatever number. Like, maybe hire 2 and then have those 2 people's job to be test for Modern and then encourage other.
No, I wasn't commenting on the I wasn't saying absurd that they can't go down to the store, obviously, right, the cars right. that aren't printed yet. Yeah. What I say is absurd is the fact that they don't test for it.
Sure.
And when you compare to the fact that, you know, 6 hours or whatever you were saying, and they cracked it, they need to just hire some more people. They're making enough money. Hire another team. I've read all the stuff that you have. I've read all the stuff that you have where they said, well, it takes too much time and this and that. And it's like, well, if you're going to have this format, you need to test for it at this point. You can't have this go on every year. You need to hire some people, spend some money, get some pros in there. They're certainly big on hiring pros to go work at Wizards. Hire some modern pros and give them a job.
And also, I mean, your comment about it took people 6 months. Alex, the difference between Oblivion Sower and Endless One, like, one's a 5-mana card that doesn't have haste. And is targetable. The other one is really cute. You can get Isimaru on turn one, and you can get a 4/4 on turn two.
The point there is also that they have less time with small sets than they do with large sets to test. It's standard even, not just...
Yeah,
they
just,
do. More to the point, I agree with the professor. I think they just need to hire two people that their job is to focus on modern, and then they bring in other people at the company during the new top eights once a week, maybe with the new cards, to be like, hey, we just want to do one tournament. Let's play it, see how it goes. Oh, it's broken. Great. All right. So you should make sure that Lightning Bolt can kill it.
Right.
Right.
Like, Thought Knotseer should be a 4/3. Or we need to be aware that, like, these lands are too good, and so you need to make, for whatever reason, be prepared to ban. In their defense, it would have been ridiculous if Wizards just banned Eye of Ugin the day before the Pro Tour happened.
Yeah.
Everyone would have been like, that's insane. And
that would have been hilarious, though, in retrospect. Oh, yeah, like imagine getting to travel into an alternate reality where they just did that, and you're the only one who knows about what it would have done, and everybody would be like, they're out of their minds.
Right. And, like, beyond that, I'm glad they created these colorless Eldrazi cards. I'd much rather them create cool, powerful, awesome, interesting cards than not. So, like...
Yeah, I mean, Thought Knotseer, I just wonder, will Thought Knotseer just be a card that once they make the Eldrazi banning, it just turns out to just be a modern staple in other decks anyway? I wonder. And, I mean, Reality Smasher's absurd.
I think Thought Knotseer and Eldrazi are both playable in other decks. First off, I think Tron will go to playing Thought Knotseer as a 4-of, probably, just once it's viable again, when there's not 3 5/5s attacking on turn 2.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, just Tron. I mean, and to that end, like... Okay, so ban Eye of Ugin because it weakens Tron slightly, but also means that now Tron gets to play Thought Knotseer and
draw. Yeah, Reality Smasher. Yeah, no, I think that's what will happen. I think Eye of Ugin is the card that goes away.
Yeah, and I think it makes the most sense.
Your calm words have really quelled the rebellious fire in me. I gotta say, I'm serious. Like, I feel a lot better. I feel a lot better about modern at this point in the podcast than I did 10 minutes before sitting down to record this podcast.
Well, that's...
But it was very depressing to go in 3 weeks in a row to two of the weekly modern events at my local game store that were firing with giant crowds and have neither of them fire for that many weeks in a row, and then to hear lots of reports of similar things happening.
Agreed.
And I looked at that, and I love this format, and I love playing it so much. And I just looked at that, and I just felt like, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah, it'll revert.
So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of it for today. We're at 1 hour and 10 minutes, so I don't want to keep going too long. So, yeah, I mean, that's what we kind of... That's the news of the month. We got reprints.
It was an intense debate. I mean, there was a lot of discussion here.
I feel like you guys won the debate, and I never say that. I always say, like you can listen to a Command Zone where I said to Jimmy and Josh, I feel like you guys ganged up on me. I never say that, but I'm going to say that here. I actually feel like I've been convinced at the end of this podcast. You have convinced me at the end of it. Not to say that some of my points didn't have merit, but you know what? You're right. I'm going to say it. You're right. Yeah.
I want you to know that there's no sweeter sound in the world than someone saying that to me.
Kessler is the most just like argumentative, just
chills
debates
down
just
my
to
back.
Debate. I mean, I think to some degree, some of the interactions we've had with folks we've met who actually listen to the podcast, which we don't get to meet in person unless we travel that many of them. But the ones we have had, you know, there's a sense that we get from people where they're like, I like the tone of it, right? I like the tone of the podcast and the way you guys approach modern, which I think to some degree is kind of our, that's like what we pride ourselves in, is that we love Magic, but we are not winning Pro Tours. We're really more interested in playing Modern and enjoying Modern and promoting creativity in Modern and keeping the format healthy.
I've won 8 Pro Tours. I'm like, I'm actually John Finkel.
Only 8? Did you take like a hiatus or something?
Well, yeah, you know, Unglued kind of pissed me off, so I stopped playing for 8 years. Yeah. But I won every Pro Tour before that.
You won every Unglued Pro Tour?
Yeah.
Copper Pro Tour and every Canadian Highlander
nice,
Pro
good.
Tour.
Congratulations. Oh, yeah. I top-8ed those, though. I was pretty happy about
it. Yeah, I remember that. I remember your mono blue aggro deck for that. That was a good one.
Yeah, but, you know, I want to thank you, Professor. Thanks for coming on. I'm glad that we were able to calm some of your fears about the format. And I mean, you know, the bannings are coming. We have 1 month gritting our teeth. But,
yeah,
I feel satiated.
I'm glad. Where can people find you?
YouTube, baby. Come find me on YouTube. Just type in the words Tellarian Community College. Type it into YouTube. Type it into Google. Just type it into the address bar. You don't need to do W. Just type it in and it'll like use the Yahoo search to bring you to me. Find me on YouTube. We've got videos, product reviews, deck techs, all kinds of stuff. Come check it out. That's the place to come is to me on YouTube. And if you're so inclined, please hit that subscribe button.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Helps a lot. Helps a lot.
Speaking of random video content, so because the Patreon kind of worked, I started Twitch streaming because I was able to pay a person like $10 to teach me what I'm doing.
All right.
I'm doing that now. Look at Twitch. I'm Xander574 on twitch.tv, or you can just look up my last name.
Xander. You'll find it.
Yeah, Xander574. You can also follow us. We are at the MMCast on Twitter. That is where we do like 99% of our interactions. We will argue with you if you disagree with us. We will calmly talk to you about how great things are if you don't.
And we're going to start with one of the things on the Patreon that we mentioned earlier is that we're going to start taking deck doctor submissions from you guys, your ideas on Modern decks. We're going to take only submissions from those that have signed up for the Patreon at the $5 level. That's like,
right?
Because otherwise the email already is quite full of them, and we read all of them, but like the ability to actually do it on a podcast and talk about it on a podcast is not something we could do with every single submission, because it would be
and we've already reached, so we will be doing a live streamed recorded, it'll all be audio podcast on Twitch once a month from now on, and it most likely will be often these Deck Doctor episodes.
Yes, so we will take your idea, we will break the idea down, we will discuss the construction of it, our suggestions, go kind of through a gauntlet, all that type of stuff, as well as video content that'll be coming up soon. So check that out, go to the Patreon, yep. and let us know your thoughts.
Also, I'm going to be at GP Detroit, like,
oh, you're
99% sure I'll be there on Friday and Saturday.
Okay.
So people can come say hi. I don't know if I'm actually playing in it, but I will be there.
My mom's in town that
looking
weekend.
Looking all. I'm gonna have to take your suit and I'll be the handsome one.
You can take one of them.
No, I'm gonna take all of your suits with me. I need to decide. I don't want to decide ahead of time. All right.
Bring like 7 suits.
Also, make sure you guys check out the Command Zone. They do awesome commander content. We talked about them at the beginning of the podcast. Yeah.
Yep.
If you want just like an easy, smooth intro, if you haven't listened to them before, I was on one of the episodes. I did the Mirren episode a couple weeks back. So yeah, check them out. Jimmy and Josh are the best.
Oh,
and
if you love the movie Mortal Kombat from 1995, my action movie anatomy action movie podcast that I do for the Popcorn Talk Network, we got basically convinced by the fans of the show, even though Mortal Kombat is not a movie that like hits our rules. We just put it up for vote, and it like crushed the vote. Everyone wanted us to do Mortal Kombat, so we're going to be doing a full discussion, background, all of it on Mortal Kombat on the episode on Wednesday, so find that.
This might be a bonus episode for the Patreon, but I would love to record a podcast episode of me disagreeing with your rules on what an action movie is.
Yeah, I don't think we need to do that.
All right, so once again, thank you, Professor, for jumping on the cast. I hope you had a good time. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much for having me.
Express thank you to all the Patreon donators. We will be doing all of the little Patreon things starting next week, where we read your names off, and we play one of the messages, so get ready for that. And yeah, we'll talk to you guys next week. Thanks very much, guys.
Bye, everyone.